It is another Saturday morning in CCO land when we talk a whole bunch of things. It's called a wine chat, among other things, and it comes from Ted Farrell from Haskell's fame. Hi, Ted. Good morning.
Good morning, Denny. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Hope you are, you and your family and all the good folks at Haskell's. Going to be a nice weekend.
It should be a glorious weekend. And, you know, we got to keep our fingers crossed for those Gophers this weekend to bring back that Floyd of Rosedale.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, what's on your mind today, Ted?
Well, today, you know, it is a very, very special time of the year. You know, granted, we have our leaves changing and people love to go out and go to the different places, pumpkin patches and arboretums and things like that, and also, you know, orchards to go pick apples. But what people kind of forget right now in the wine industry, at least in the northern hemisphere right now, is probably the busiest time of the year for all these different wineries, because for them it's harvest as well. And so it's a excruciating time for those vineyards. You know, so many times when people go visit there, you kind of wonder, what do these guys do all day? You know, it's just a lot of like cleaning barrels and scraping tanks and things like that. But they are currently in their busiest season right now in all the different wineries, you know, whether it's Napa or France or down in Italy or Spain. Those guys are out there just roving through their vineyards, collecting up the grapes and bringing them into their different shades to get everything going. And it's really, truly an amazing process to watch and see. And it's, you know, I can always kind of coordinate it or draw it toward like a fancy kitchen on a Friday or Saturday night. It is just pure controlled chaos where you know, you hear some of these fellas go, "I'm the vineyard manager." And you're sort of like, well, what do? You know, you sit and stare and watch grapes. Well, this is their go time where they have people up and down those different vineyards, checking out the grapes, using different methods. You know, there are some new scientific gizmos that you can put a grape in and it'll tell you, you know, exactly where it's at. They do that. Some of them still do it by the eye. They just know it's ready. And so then they start picking apart their different vineyards, their different plots, and they start harvesting. And they really get going. And harvesting is an interesting thing because nowadays you do see some mechanical harvesting, but a lot of people really like the harvesting by hand. It's a little bit gentler on the grapes, a little bit softer, but some of those big production harvests are, you know, quite amazing. You know, leave it to the John Deere company to figure out a gizmo that can go right over the vine, shake it, you know, all the vines, drop all the berries and get them away. And in a fast manner. It's truly amazing. The one thing, though, people sometimes ask about that is, hey, I would love to go out and see a harvest, or I want to be out there. And it's my humble opinion, this is probably the worst time to go visit vineyards because those guys are in such panic mode. You know, some people are still accommodating. They might be real big. You know, they still have a tasting room being manned if you can go do that. But if you really want to see it or talk to the people who are really involved, they are so busy running around making sure that all those grapes are being brought in and produced and getting ready where there are, you know, again, whether it's a controlled chaos or a panic mode, whatever you want to call it. But they're sitting there just feverishly harvesting those grapes. And it's a very interesting thing because it's also a big tradition. In and around Europe, you see a lot of different migrant workers. Yeah, generally from Poland, a lot from Romania, that will go around and do a lot of the harvesting, similar to what we have the migrant workers here. It's also a family affair because depending on the size of your vineyard, depending on your production, usually everybody comes down, whether it's grandma or grandpa, all sorts of cousins, everyone comes down to do it because they really need to get that, you know, that product in and get it all ready to turn into wine. Because as many will joke, that's Chateau cash flow. You need to get that going on. But it's a wonderful tradition that so many families have. And it really spawns an interesting little culture because much like anything, you're out there in the fields working hard. And then you come back in, you know, you kick your feet up and enjoy a little bit of your bounty from the year before where you have a little wine. But the one thing you see kind of historically or traditionally is each region has their own kind of fare that they serve everybody. You kind of find that it's a slow roasted, just rich, hearty food that they serve all these workers as a part of their pay. You know, it's not only do they get paid monetarily, but they also take care of them. You know, some of those wineries actually almost become flop houses because a lot of people are staying in the barns and things like that. But that's part of the camaraderie of it. I mean, I guess we could maybe say it's similar to a deer camp or a duck camp where everybody just kind of, you're just there and you're enjoying one's company. But what you see is, like, especially in France, you know, the hearty, hearty dishes of France are often served because they're also easier to make in mass, like a beef bourguignon, where it's a rich, rich, heavy meat or a big red meat, a roast kind of thing. But then there's all kinds of great hearty vegetables, carrots and turnips and potatoes and things like that, because those people are out in those fields working so hard. And also in France, one of the famous dishes you see as well is coq au vin, the cock in wine, because, you know, originally when your rooster died, it was an old stringy bird that you would sit and soak in wine and cook in wine for a long time to loosen up those meat fibers. They've kind of fancied up the recipe and they use fresher chicken nowadays, but you see a real rich, hearty, hearty meal like that. The coq au vin sauce is just something to die for. But, you know, in Italy, it's very similar. They have a few dishes that they serve that are, you know, you see a lot of things like their stews, a lentil stew, or, you know, pasta fazool, which is a soup that has beans and all sorts of pasta in there, to really, you know, stoop to those people's ribs because they're out there working so hard, working so diligently in those fields. And it's kind of a new tradition. Again, everybody at the end of the day, when hopefully everything's done, or at least you're caught up, maybe the next batch of grapes for tomorrow are coming in, and everyone gathers around a big table and you have these huge dishes, and, you know, it's just everyone eats kind of family style. And it's a great, great tradition. And you see that all throughout the world. Now, our friends in the Southern Hemisphere will be doing that in and around July, where we're doing that all around now. But, you know, you see that in California is very strict. Well, they do a little bit more on the roasted meat side. They do have some hearty dishes, but, you know, the barbecue kind of thing. And one reason why they do that is because the slow cooking method like that, you still need to cook out in the field doing some work. So they can sit and make that stuff, it slowly steeps, and then they can come back and check on it. So it's a great, great setup. And the interesting thing about that is you're bringing those grapes into the Chez and you're crushing them. And the big thing you're starting up is the actual fermentation process. And you can get real geeky and chemically on this, but basically what it is you crush all those grapes, the natural sugar or the sugars in all the juice combined with yeast. Now, oftentimes, in the olden times, you kind of relied on the natural yeast that would cling to the skins of the grape, and it happened naturally, but you can't always rely on that. So winemakers now have different strains of yeast that they will add to that concoction, to the grape juice, to make it wine. And what happens is the yeast then eats those sugars, and the byproduct of that, twofold, one is alcohol, and the other one is carbon dioxide. And that's where, believe it or not, it can be a little dangerous making all that wine, because that byproduct of carbon dioxide, if you don't have proper ventilation, every so often you do hear of a winemaker who passes away because he didn't vent it correctly and he gets that carbon dioxide poisoning and literally dies. And that's, you hear that, it isn't very often anymore, but it's that fermentation process, and that's where you kind of get into the science of wine, as far as what you can and what you can't produce or how you're doing it. And you're really, really, you know, those winemakers are properly on edge at this point because they're getting that fermentation process going. It takes about 5 days, maybe 10, depending on who and what they're making their wines for. And that's where, believe it or not, the United States has stepped in and really aided in the production of wine, because your best temperature for fermenting wine for reds is about 75 degrees to 85 degrees. But for whites, it's about 45 to 60 degrees, depending. Now, years and years ago, white wine was tricky to make because oftentimes in those cellars, you didn't get that cold enough of a temperature. So sometimes those wines were a little bit off, and white wine was not great. Not to say it's easier to make red wine, but the temperature side of things played a little bit easier for winemakers, because generally in the harvest time, it is about 75, 80 degrees, where to get your wine temperature down a little bit lower can be a lot more difficult because of that. But what the United States has done with our technology is the stainless steel temperature-controlled fermentation tanks. So it makes it a lot easier for those winemakers to pour that juice into those big tanks, literally through the dial to 45 minutes. A little bit more scientific than that, because they'll have to measure the sugar levels, they'll have to measure the yeast levels, figure out a few things of what God gave you in the vineyard to kind of figure out exactly what temperature, but you kind of set and forget. You can put that in that stainless steel tank. The temperature is just right, and it makes it a lot easier. And it's that technology that you've seen adopted all throughout the world, where, you know, originally some of the Europeans just thought it was American folly doing that, and then they realized how good their wines were, and consistent is the bigger issue, how consistent their wines were year after year, because you could hit that fermentation mark right on the spot and make delicious wines. So it's a fun little deal, but that fermentation process is very interesting, and, you know, you kind of get into the science of it. You know, there's so much romance with the wine industry. You know, you overlook those vineyards. You have a little wine, maybe you have a little sausage and cheese. You just think it's so romantic, but you kind of forget. Right around now, they're harvesting. It is proper go time, Denny. I mean, they're really doing it and getting it in there. And it's an exciting time because you're seeing what God gave you in those vineyards. The bounty of all your work is coming in right now. And so, you know, we're getting the reports slowly and steadily, but it's still a little premature to figure out exactly how the 2025 vintage is going to be in the Northern Hemisphere.
I know we're going to talk about Haskell's here in about a minute, but I've been thinking about harvest time, and I know we weren't when you and I and Bo and the listeners were in Sonoma County. There was some vineyard that we visited, and they were talking about the Minnesota connection with wood, with barrels. Am I dreaming that, or has there been some connection with certain barrels from the wood from Minnesota?
You are correct, Kenny. What happened is a lot of the winemakers had realized that a very, very porous oak barrel kind of exudes too much oak flavor to it, and real tight, fine oak is better. It doesn't export so much flavor. And they realized that oak from the northern vineyards like Minnesota, Wisconsin, the oak grows slower. So basically the rings in the oak tree are a little bit smaller. We're down in Missouri, one of the largest cooperages. You see the growth rings that are a little bit wider because they get warmer climate. They grow a little faster. They have a longer growing season, where ours are shorter. So the fiber or the structure of the oak is a lot tighter. So it exudes a little bit more elegant. And so you do see that. Our friends from Murphy Good, they're from Minnesota originally. They even have a Vikings blend where they put a little helmet on there because all the Chardonnay in that is exposed to oak from Minnesota.
All right. Let's hear it. And go Gophers while we're thinking about Minnesota. Ted, tell the folks about Haskell's and what's going on.
Right. Well, we've already taken care of a lot of the harvest from years past, and we have stocked and loaded and ready to go for anything that you have going on this weekend. There's a Haskell's all around the metro area to take care of any of your needs. We have a Haskell's in downtown Minneapolis with lots of free parking on the weekend. We have a Haskell's in Minnetonka right across from the Ridgedale Shopping Center. We have a Haskell's right in Highland Village on Ford Parkway. There's a Haskell's down in Lowman's Plaza right in Bloomington. We have a Haskell's out in shells here. I did see a few boats still out on the lake, Denny, so there are some optimists in this state. So if you're out in Excelsior, swing by the place, grab some wine or even a burger in the pub. You can always go to Haskell's White Bear Lake if you're headed out east, or, you know, if you're looking at leaves in Stillwater, stop by our Stillwater store. Down south, right off the 35, there's a Haskell's in Faribault. We also have a Haskell's in Plymouth, and if you're headed up north, swing by our super cellar up in Maple Grove. It's a sight to be seen. And if you can't fit any of that into your schedule, stop by Haskell's.com 24/7, place your order, and we'll even deliver it for you.
Very easy to do. All right, Ted, have a good weekend. Go Gophers, and let's talk next Saturday.
I look forward to it, Denny.
Thank you, Ted. Ted Farrell from Haskell's.